Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knockoma Nation podcast show. Oh, Knockoma Nation podcast show. Heyo! It's another episode of the Knockoma Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Josh Brown. I got Ken Hendricks over there. Ken, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Josh?
You look great. You got a cattle cap on that you got at the sale.
Yeah.
And then we got JT Holton over there. JT, how are you?
I'm all right.
You've got your baseballism cap on, I think.
Yes.
Right?
The Turkey Plymouth Day. Rock Gobblers.
Yeah,
the Turkey Plymouth Day Rock hat. Gobblers. Is that where the Pilgrims landed? Plymouth Rock?
I don't know.
JT's a big fan of the Rock Gobblers.
I said Rock.
Gobblers. Rock Gobblers, right? That's the name of it, right?
Rock Lobster!
Guys, we're trying to have a podcast here, okay?
I blame the whiskey.
Everybody is in festive holiday mode, I've noticed. It's Tuesday. Apparently no one has to work tomorrow.
Nope.
So we're all enjoying kicking off the holiday season, my favorite stretch of the year. I don't take anything seriously from now until January 1st. January 2nd.
I broke my own rules and listened to a little bit of Christmas music this week. I never listened before Thanksgiving, but I broke my rule. And
yeah, Halloween's over. November 1st begins Christmas.
Yeah, I hear you.
I agree.
Hey, fellas, we ended the last podcast talking about Ricky Henderson, and I was about to ask this question: who, 20 years from now, will we look back and say, and talk about the way we talk about Ricky Henderson?
You mean on the field or off the field?
Either.
Trevor Bauer. And that's probably it.
Manny Ramirez? Like, I know Manny's not active,
yeah, Manny,
but like...
Yeah, Manny.
But like, I'm really trying to think, like, what guys, like, fit that mold. And
yeah.
Like, Manny Ramirez fits.
Puig. Maybe a little Puig. Maybe.
A little bit, but Puig, okay, so talent-wise, I don't think of Puig in anywhere near the same category as, like, Ricky Henderson. You know what I'm saying? Sure. Like, I can't
for sure
imagine that.
For me, it's Trevor Bauer. Also, side note, Puig just signed with Rachel Luba.
I don't know who Rachel Luba is.
She's Trevor Bauer's agent. She's, like, 29. Okay. She's okay. Super cool.
And, I thought that was, like, KY Jelly or something.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's Rachel's Luba.
Oh.
I
heard a Jiffy.
I thought it was like, you know, bath.
I love how
scrubber.
People on Twitter think that I'm
that's
the
Rachel's
worst.
Loofah.
Like, people on Twitter think that I'm the worst out of this outfit, and that is just not true.
If Rachel doesn't work out, she's Rachel Fupa.
Well, I promise you, Josh, you are much worse out of that outfit than in it. Please stay in it. Don't need you out of the outfit. Just
seriously, though, Puig signs with Rachel Luba, which is part of like the whole momentum YouTube, you know, kind of circle.
I don't know anything about all that.
What are you talking about? Check out Trevor Bauer on YouTube. He's got a company called Momentum.
Oh.
Great baseball content.
But see, okay, so here's my problem with you saying Trevor Bauer, Josh. And like, I like Trevor Bauer's, but don't get me wrong. But it feels a little bit like it's drummed up PR machine Trevor Bauer, whereas Ricky Henderson was like Ricky being Ricky or Manny being Manny. It didn't feel like a PR
clout.
Scheme. It just felt like that's who they were. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like Trevor Bauer feels like everything he does is intentionally meant to attract attention and build PR rep off of it.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And that's just going to be the way it is for every athlete here forth now that we live in a social media world. Like, is this done for just clout and notoriety? Because Ricky had these things. He didn't know any of these stories were ever going to make it, you know, published. He didn't do these in front of newspaper men. These are just stories that people told about.
He was so pure.
Yeah. Wow. Now, the other question is, how much of those stories are now censored? And what I mean by that is not inappropriate censored, because like the Ricky stories aren't inappropriate or anything like that. But what I mean is, if we didn't know people in the scenes, me and Josh, you and I and JT would all assume Mike Foltynewicz, probably not the smartest guy in the room, but we think he was just kind of an average Joe that winded up not being able to pitch. You know what I'm saying? But right. Because we know somebody, we kind of got the story that Mike Foltynewicz is super not smart. Like really, really not smart. Like,
yeah,
very lucky he can throw the ball very hard. Right.
Guess we'll get canceled out of Mike Foltynewicz appearance on the Knockover Nation.
Yeah, podcast. We probably can. Like we've heard stories from behind the scenes of how Matt Kemp was terrible in the clubhouse in dealing with writers, right? Yeah. Like we've heard stories
and
of
Bartolo Colon.
And Bartolo Colon.
Low key asshole.
We heard stories about how there was no way the Upton brothers were ever coming back to Atlanta because the front office hated them so bad. And not just because BJ or Melvin played so poorly, but that they were both clubhouse terrors and caused problems constantly.
Yeah.
But none of that's ever come to the light of day in actual news stories. Like the average fan would have never heard any of those stories. You know what I'm saying? Like, and yes, those are semi-negative, I guess, but how many stories now get edited because, like we talked about on the last episode, it's not stats-driven, it's not numbers. It's just stories, you know. It's just Ricky calling and wanting tickets for Game 5 of a game of a series that got swept in 4 games, you know.
Framing his check, or
yeah, framing $1 million check and not cashing it. Yeah,
what was he said? Someone asked if he had the Garth Brooks album. He said, "I don't have albums. I have CDs."
What? Yeah,
what a nut.
I mean, but like, I feel like there's not very many of those personalities, at least not those stories of those personalities, shared now. Am I wrong? Like, am I
Minori Kawasaki? Might have been
Minori. Minori and thankfully YouTube exists, because
yeah,
just put that in your Google.
He wasn't
machine.
Really seeking it. He's a good example of this, because
just
he wasn't
a fun guy.
He didn't have social media. He was just being pure, being himself. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I fear for the game losing personality.
Elliot Johnson was a pure soul.
I heard a phone talking.
Sorry.
It was not mine.
I blame JT. He was probably pulling up Munenori.
No, I was trying to find...
I am Japanese!
I'm a Japanese monkey, is never crap.
Banana. What was the banana?
Yeah, he says he eats bananas for every game to avoid cramp. And they said bananas. Yeah. He says, yes, monkeys eat banana. Monkeys never crap.
If y'all, when was that? About 2014?
2010? 2010-ish?
That was sooner than that.
Well, because DeRosa was in one of the videos. Yeah, maybe it was like 12, somewhere around.
No, it was 2014-ish.
Okay.
So looking back at it, part of the reason those stories came out then was because Ricky didn't follow the rules of polite interviews. Like, we never heard stories about Greg Maddux when Greg Maddux was playing. We heard the stories about Greg Maddux peeing on somebody in the shower from a tell-all sort of book written later in Chipper Jones' career, right? So... Like, the stories of personality only come out when somebody ignores the rules of what you're supposed to say PR-wise, even back then. Yeah. It was just, back then, I think we paid more attention to it somehow. I don't know. Like, maybe everyone now is super careful about what they say because of cancel culture. I don't know. What do you guys think?
There was a lot of mystery back then. It was good. It was a beautiful thing, but it also robbed us, I guess, too, you could say. So, Will Clark, right? I remember about like 5 or 6 years ago when that 30 for 30 came out with Will Clark and Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it, and I had no idea that Will Clark was funny. And he had this
hilarious.
He had this awesome personality. I grew up on Will Clark.
And I thought Will Clark was like Nick Markakis.
Same. Yeah. He looks boring. He's a very plain looking guy. And so as a kid, as a 10-year-old, trading cards, you know, trading my 91 Fleer Donruss cards, Will Clark was, you know, that guy kind of in that era. I just, because of the way he looked, I just thought Will Clark was just this boring guy. He has a boring name. His name is Will Clark. He looks plain as day. And then years later, I watched this 30 for 30, and he is so funny. And I had no idea. And that's, so that's an example of, in a way, because of no social media, we were kind of robbed from getting to know the players. But the beauty, I guess you could say, too, is we didn't get to know the players.
It's give or take. Yeah, it's both.
Yeah, and so I think to Ken's point now, because everything is it's so hyper focused. You're being watched under a microscope. If you're Ronald Acuna, if you're any of these guys, if they make one little mistake, everybody knows about it.
Yeah,
you know, Tony La Russa getting the DUI. That's just one of many examples. You know. Everybody finds out about everything. If you slip up, if you show up to batting practice without socks on, you know.
Did you Twitter hear about the kid? Did you hear about the kid in the NHL draft that
got
cut and dropped
for bullying a handicapped kid in high school,
eighth grade.
Yeah,
eighth grade, he bullied a handicapped kid, and because of that, they would not draft him.
The Phoenix Coyotes rescinded their draft on this kid. Yeah.
Also, the kid refused to apologize for it.
Good for him.
I don't care. It was eighth grade.
No, good for him. It's like, eighth grade. Cares? Whatever.
Like,
no,
I'm not advocating bullying handicapped kids, just for the record, but like, you're eighth grade? Like, shut up. You're going to rescind your draft because I bullied a kid in eighth grade? Stop.
I also would not repent for anything I did in eighth grade because I was in freaking eighth grade. I mean, come on.
This is the worst. Eighth graders are the worst.
Yes.
They're not as bad as seventh graders are actually a little bit worse in my personal experience.
In my experience, eighth graders are worse.
Sixth graders, very impressionable.
Yeah, they're still scared.
Yeah, they're scared. They're super sweet. They think you're cool.
My dad
Seventh graders are demonic.
My dad was a middle school principal for a little while, and he was an assistant principal at the high school for a while. And my dad said, give me high schoolers all day long because middle schoolers have no conscience and they can lie and you can't tell that they're lying. They just lie.
Yeah.
They have no conscience. He said, by the time they get to high school, they have a conscience and at least a little bit of one. And so when they lie, you can tell that they're lying. It's 100% obvious that they're lying. But in middle school, they don't have any conscience yet, and they're terrible people. That was what he always said. My dad's philosophy was also, if they would just let him open the school year and shoot one child. Not kill him, just shoot him in the leg so that they know dad's serious about it. That was his philosophy. He said, I would get rid of 90% of my discipline problems if they let me shoot one kid at the beginning of the year. Just shoot him in the leg. It doesn't have to be anywhere dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, nothing super dangerous.
Put the fear of God into him.
Right. Like, just shoot one, and the rest would line up, you know?
So, senior year of college, my senior year, the way my classes worked out my senior year, I think I had classes like Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they were very sparse, and so I had a lot of free time, and I thought, I knew a guy that did substitute teaching at this middle school in Lakeland, Florida, and so I was like, I'm going to do that. It's just easy money, whatever. So I did it for my senior year of college. I was a substitute teacher. It was Lakeland, Florida, Lake Gibson? Was it Lake Gibson Middle School? I think it was Lake Gibson Middle School. And that is when I learned about the middle schooler and the psyche of the middle schooler. And in a 3-year span, the human changes so much from age like 11 to 14. Like, it's crazy. Like, a sixth grader is a different animal than an eighth grader. It was fascinating.
Yeah, totally fascinating. Yeah. It's kind of crazy how all that works.
Seventh graders are the worst people They're worse than liberals.
Speaking of seventh graders and liberals and bad interactions, Josh, I saw that this week you defriended and then made up with your liberal friend Michael Kelly. I wanted to hear more details on exactly how all this came about, what happened. I know Michael's been unexcited about your recent post concerning the COVID-19. A friend of the show, Michael Kelly, or ex-friend of the show, or maybe he's friend of the show again.
A friend of the show. He's been on. Has Michael been on more than anyone? Maybe.
Probably.
Maybe.
Yeah, he's probably been on more episodes than except for me and you and JT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Michael is obsessed with Donald Trump and COVID.
Yeah, he got a little turd syndrome, Trump derangements. Yeah.
And so the last several months, it seems like, and I don't think I'm imagining this, but it seems like Michael only engages on my COVID posts.
Yeah, that's
and true. I will admit, and I told Michael this the other morning. I will admit that I probably have tweeted about on certain days COVID too much. Okay.
Oh, but, there's no doubt you have. I will 100% back that up. Yes, 100%.
But it seems like Michael Kelly is like the COVID police, and it just feels like. He doesn't engage in any of my, you know, Brinley posts when I tweet a picture of my baby girl,
right,
or anything baseball related. But if I tweet about COVID, Michael's gonna tell me how wrong I am. And so, the other morning, it was Sunday morning.
See, like Dan Keats is good. Dan Keats, he comments on all your posts and he makes fun of your COVID posts.
Are you Dan Keats?
I'm not Dan Keats, I swear.
All right, okay.
I swear.
So okay. So
speaking
anyway,
of which, he said he was coming to Boone today or tomorrow. You should like
if I ever find if I ever find look at me. If I ever find out that you were Dan Keats' old name, I will
I am not Dan Keats, I promise
honestly,
you. Honestly, I promise you I'm not Dan Keats.
Dan Keats was on the show.
I will.
Josh, Dan Keats I don't was on the show. With
I
us.
Don't believe whoever that was the real Dan Keats.
It was the real Dan Keats. The real Dan Keats really is an old guy, man. Like, meet him. Have lunch
I swear
with
to God. Ken, one day, I swear to God, if we're in the same retirement home somewhere in North Georgia, you know, and you tell me that you were Dan Keats, I will. If I'm 80.
You don't have to worry. It's never going to happen because I have never been Dan Keats, nor am I Dan Keats. So
Dan Keats has been me.
That's true.
I've never been Dan Keats.
He has pretended to be JT.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I don't know. He made a fake profile of me. I thought it was cool. I was honored.
All right. So Sunday morning, I tweeted. So Sunday morning before church. Well, let me back up. So I've got a new rule that I started this past Sunday where I'm not going to tweet anything before church. Cause what happens is I tweet something before church and I think, and I'm like, and I want to check in on it and it like messes up my church experience. You know what I mean?
True.
That's bad. I think JT had that happen like a year ago. He was, you were arguing with somebody and it was, you were like going to church or something.
It was Easter Sunday. And
yeah,
I
that's
was
what
arguing
it was.
Back and forth with somebody in the church parking lot. I can't remember what it was about. I don't know. I think he said, I can't remember what it was. I think he said something like, I don't know, that Mike Soroka was overrated. And I was like, you bastard. You son of a bitch. Your mother's a whore. And then I walked into church and learned more about the resurrection of Christ. And then I felt bad.
Anyway, Sunday morning, I tweeted, I get on Twitter Sunday morning and everyone and their mother, it seemed like, was tweeting about the vaccine, right?
And dun, dun, dun.
The vaccine, you know. And, of course, Trump is like, you know, this is my vaccine. And the left is like, no, it's not, you know. And so I just found the humor in that. And so I tweeted a joke. And the joke was, I hope whatever vaccine it is Trump's vaccine so that it will then be it will then be frowned upon to take it by society, you know, and or socially unacceptable to take it. That's what I said. And so I tweeted it, and then I go to church. And then, honest to God, during communion, I check my phone. this is terrible. I check my phone, and I've been lit up by people without a sense of humor who don't see that the joke was not about COVID or the vaccine. The joke was basically anything associated with Trump is the worst thing ever. That's the joke. And honestly, it's totally true. And so Michael replied to it, and I don't even know what he said. He said something about how it was Pfizer's vaccine and it technically wasn't Trump's. I don't know whose vaccine is. I don't care.
Not actually in the lab mixing chemicals.
Yeah, like I don't care. Like I don't know. I don't know if it's Pfizer's or Johnson & Johnson's or Duke's Mayonnaise's.
Pfizer. They're the people that make the keep you up drug, the diet like, Viagra.
I don't know whose vaccine. I don't care. My point was, whatever is associated with Trump is bad. And so jokingly, I was like, if it's Trump's vaccine, we don't have to take it because it'll be like that, right? And so, you know, Michael was like, well, actually, you know, Pfizer, da 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 da. And then I got triggered during communion. This is so terrible. And I quote tweeted it, and I was like something about like, you know, you only comment on my COVID post, but not, you never interact with any of my Brinley post or my cooking post or my baseball post. And I tweeted it, and I got a bunch of attention, and I was like, I just dunked on you, Michael, screw you, whatever. At the end of it, I said, bye, you know? And so, and then all day for 8 hours, I would check in on Twitter, and for 8 hours, Michael and some guy named Bassstalker, his Twitter name is Bassstalker. He has like 11
followers. Yeah, he listens to the show. He listens to the show all the time. Yeah.
So Michael and some guy named Bassstalker all day were going back and forth about the vaccine and Pfizer and COVID, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then Monday morning, Michael sent me a long DM about, how I'm, you know,
being a troll,
how I'm being a troll, how I'm spreading misinformation.
Gotcha. Whatever,
you know?
Gotcha.
And I said, Michael, if I'll admit that I do troll, and I am a sarcastic, annoying person. Okay.
Sometimes. Yeah.
But I was like, honestly, Michael, if I'm sharing CDC, like screenshots of CDC stats, which I do, and then you poo poo on it, like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. And he was like, look, let's just not talk about politics or COVID. I'm like, that's fine. I said, but one day we're having a drink and we're talking 100% about politics. It's going to happen. I don't care what you say. And he's like, that sounds awesome, man. You know, he was like, you're a good person. I'm like, you're a good person too. I think you're great. You know, we talked and went back and forth and we made up. But yeah, we're cool now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. I'm glad you worked things out. That being said, Michael, if you're listening right now, we're glad you're a friend of the show, but you may want to turn the episode off for the next 15 minutes. Just giving you a heads up, because I think we need to talk about something that's super important, Josh. JT, I think this is very important and very relevant to today's baseball world, and I think it's super important that we discuss this, and that is critical base theory.
Oh, yeah.
What is critical base theory?
Well, critical base theory says that the world of baseball is divided up, and its sections of power are legislated based upon the fact that people only respect one base. People only care about home plate anymore. It's all they care about.
It's not a base. It's a plate.
Well, exactly. It gets its own distinction. It's not a base like the other bases. Like, no one gets to this home plate love that they have without standing on the bags of first, second, third bases. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. First, home plate gets a special name. It's just fourth base.
Yeah.
But instead, we give it a special name. And we make sure that it keeps this pristine whiteness. I mean, do any of the other bags have somebody come out and wipe them off after
they don't.
Random
they don't.
At-bats just for
also,
the heck of
also
keeping
want to
it
point
pristine
out that shortstop,
and white?
Shortstop doesn't have a base.
Shortstop doesn't have a base.
Also, the other bases are elevated, and home plate's the only one that's not.
Exactly.
That's true. It's flat. The other bases have more depth. more character, more ability for people to stand upon them. Because do you know how many people have blown out a knee while trying to stand on fourth base? And in fact, I think from now on this show, we should call it fourth base and not home plate, so that we show that we are not
bassist.
We're not bassist. We did not look down upon people of other bags, other that have more depth. We are not bassist. And it's very important that we recognize this. Now look, fellas, here's the other part of this. That is, not only do we take the one base that is completely flat and has no personality or depth, but then they put a triangle on it, right? It's obviously run by the Illuminati.
Hang on. Time out. Is it technically a triangle? Because a triangle just has three sides, right? Yeah.
It's
home plate.
A rhodohedron.
It's a pentagon now. Yeah.
Well,
it's a square. What I was referencing, Josh, is it's a square plate that they then put the triangle on top of.
Okay.
Referencing the Illuminati. The Illuminati runs all of baseball now. And
also, if you try to be like anti-basist, for example, I've seen so many times when a double play is made and then like the second baseman they retire the side via double play or whatever. The second baseman's running off the field back to the dugout, and he gives the first baseman a high five, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think, oh, he's not basis because he's acknowledging the first baseman, but is he real? But actually, he's actually doing that to make himself look good on camera.
Exactly.
Something to think about.
You know what else, Josh, is, you know stats like what is it, OPS plus and WRC plus?
Yeah.
Do you know they give weighted benefits if you prefer to touch home plate all the time or fourth base all the time? That's complete segregation. A guy that goes to first base all the time and appreciates the strength of first base, that man has just as much value as a man who fails to get to first base most of the time unless he hits one of those and we call it a home run when really it should be a fourth plater.
Right.
And that is, you know, he should be able to go first base. Tell me this, Josh. Can you hit a, quote, home run without standing upon the backs of first base and second base and third base?
You cannot. Why are singles hitters paid less than home run hitters?
Right. So really what we're saying here is all those Braves bloggers out there who keep trying to tell us that someone like Jock Peterson is more valuable than someone like Nick Markakis, they're really just bassist at their heart. That's really what it is deep down they're bassist that only prefer the Illuminati ran flat, no depth version of baseball that prefers fourth platers over first basers.
Why don't we
call it a plate instead of a base? I mean, is it somehow better than the rest because it's, you know, flat? Does that somehow
That's the society we live in. And also, like, when you think about it, like, too, like, shortstop, okay? Everybody poo-poos on Ozzie Smith because of his batting average?
Yeah, JT.
But is it really because of his batting average?
I think JT deep down is a basis, maybe.
Ozzie Smith, he was a .258 career hitter.
See,
JT. He hit 300 once.
Wow. JT is letting his basis show.
Your inherent basism is showing on this podcast.
I went to see Ozzie Smith talk at a dinner function one time. He was super engaging.
Tell us, JT. I bet you have lots of friends who are shortstops, don't you? You have lots of friends that are first basers. Right?
First off,
your best
shortstop
friend is a first baser, isn't he?
Time out. Shortstop's a misleading term. Corey Seager is 6'5", and he was the World Series MVP and the NLCS MVP. He is not short at all.
Also, Trevor Story.
He doesn't stop the ball all the time.
Cal Ripken Jr. is huge.
Right. He was a very large shortstop. He's like kind of the first.
Also very Aryan looking too. Just say it.
I also noticed that both of you guys have only mentioned the white shortstops who are.
I mentioned Ozzie Smith.
I mentioned Ozzie Smith.
Not white.
Josh mentioned Ozzie Smith, and we ask you to chime in. Don't steal the identity of Josh's thing and pretend like you have some special relationship that prevents you from being basist, JT. This is a real problem for you. Do we need to have an intervention right here on the show for your basism? Sorry.
Sure. Okay.
In other news, guys, did you see where Greg Norman got a picture taken of him with him being pretty much naked?
Wait, Greg Norman isn't like the shark?
Check the group. Check the group text there, fellas.
Yeah, what was that you just sent to us?
Wait, what?
I feel like it's important that you guys see this.
Is that real?
That's real. 100% real. That being said, Greg Norman at 80 years old, rocking like the old man 8-pack. Like, full on.
Is that real?
That's real. 100%. 100%. If you haven't seen it, check out PGA Memes on Instagram. They have a picture of it. It's as far as I can tell, it's not inappropriate. It's just very insinuating. So, yeah. Way to go, you know, Greg Norman. I hope I look like that when I'm your age. I bet he's still really got a good stroke there. Fellas, the Braves today signed the one and only Morton Salt. Charlie. The main man, Morton, has been signed by the Atlanta Braves to a $15 million one-year deal.
When did mediocre players start getting one-year $15 million deals? Real talk.
Well, I don't know if I go so far as to say mediocre, Josh.
Oh, come on. Come on. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, look, he did not have the best year last year. His velocity was down a little bit. At the end of the season, though, it was not down, and he looked fantastic. He also was played in the World Series, correct? If I'm not incorrect on that.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Do you know of all pitchers in the history of baseball, Charlie is one of only three to win four playoff clinch games.
Wow.
Kind of a cool stat.
Yeah, we tweeted that. And by we, I mean Boggy. Our researchers and stuff. Braves options guy.
Who are the other three? Andy Pettit?
Curt Schilling.
And Justin Verlander, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wait, was it? Andy Pettit, really?
No. No, Curt Schilling. And
Justin Verlander?
Yeah.
Okay, never heard of them. all right, that's weird.
Nice. Yeah. Kind of cool. Josh, give us your real feelings here on Charlie Morton. You do think he's somewhat overrated.
If I just saw Braves Twitter today, you would have thought the Braves just signed
Jacob DeGrom.
Jacob DeGrom, like it was off the chain. And honestly, I bought into it. Without even looking at the numbers, I just because of like the vibe of Braves Twitter, I was like, holy crap, the Braves just threw down on Charlie Morton. Without even looking at numbers, I was like, hell yeah, they just got the greatest pitcher God's ever created, based on what I see on my newsfeed.
Yeah, there's no way that he doesn't end up overrated compared to the response that Braves Twitter gave him over this signing. Yeah.
And so then I went to his Statcast, and he was like, he was okay.
He will be a good fifth starter.
Great fifth starter. Great fifth starter. If you look past his 2020 is weird. 2020 was 60 games, and he had like a 4.74 ERA, you know, and a kind of a crappy whip, whatever. But if you look at his previous 2 years, off the chain.
He's been a great playoff pitcher.
Yes, 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 yes. And I would guarantee you that's why the Braves signed him, is they don't really care if he makes 20 starts in the regular season near as much as they do if he can make 2 to 3 really good starts in the postseason. You know,
here's the thing though. You got to remember, if a player ever previously played for the Braves, then Braves fans just desperately want to sign that guy again.
That's true.
Yeah, like, the Braves Ozuna could sign right Kyle Davies, and people would go like apeshit.
Can we talk about how bad Charlie Morton was the first time he was with the Braves? Because he was
But he was like 21 years old.
I know. He didn't get good though until he was like what 30?
32? So he started cheating with the Astros.
Yeah. His spin rate went up like 300 RPM.
The Braves could re-sign, if the Braves re-signed JoJo Reyes and brought him out of retirement, people would be like, oh my God, this is awesome. That's just the thing we do. I don't know why we do it, but we have this thing where if a former Brave is available, we want that guy.
I will say this. It is nice to be able to laugh at the people who say Liberty Media will not spend money. When the Braves just spent $26 million on Drew Smyly and Charlie Morton.
For like the third year in a row, they've been out front in front of everybody spending money before anybody else.
Yeah. Now, that being said,
this
fellas,
is a theme now.
Alex Anthopoulos came out in an interview today and said they had three guys that they were looking at adding to this team during this offseason. They have signed two of them. Speaking of pitching, That's pretty serious. And there's one thing about it that I believe, fellas, and that is if Alex Anthopoulos intentionally signs someone, not out of desperation like Robbie Erlin or Tommy Malone or something like that, but truly signed someone with intent, went out and got him, how many of those have busted? Cole Hamels?
Yeah, that's a bust. I'm trying to think of guys he signed.
Who busted?
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about like fill in players that he bought to kind of just, you know, fill a temporary role. I'm like, people he actually went out aggressively, spent money. Marcell Ozuna, that one kind of worked out, right? Yeah. Will Smith, that one kind of worked out. Mark Melanson, that one worked out.
You could argue Chris Martin, McCann was hurt a lot.
McCann played great though back in Atlanta when he was healthy.
When he was healthy.
And it wasn't like he had a busted lost year. I think he lost about 4 weeks out of that season with a pulled hammy, if I remember right, something like that.
But he played like you would expect. And I give the benefit of doubt because you're not signing him for his in game ability. Brian McCann for the intangibles.
You're right.
He's an
old
catcher.
There were people that said when they signed him that this was just a nostalgia move, that Brian McCann would not be productive, that he batted 230 for the Astros last year he was active. And we said at the time, we said, he's had complete knee surgery. If he's healthy, we think he could be a lot better player. If I remember correctly, he batted about 260, something like that. Yeah. And I think he hit about 12 home runs that year, give or take, which was a huge improvement over what anybody said, because there were people saying they really thought Brian McCann would retire like a month into the season or something. There were people that were very overtly suggesting that. That was not like some fringe conspiracy theorist. That was like bloggers saying, I believe it was actually Ryan, our buddy, who actually, I believe it was, that said he really thought this was just a farewell tour for Brian McCann. And so for what they – for what people thought, McCann did really well in comparison, JT. So that's like, that's not saying he was the best. It wasn't like it was the best season of his career or anything like that. But they paid him, what, like $1 million, I think, to come back, and he was totally worth that. It was, I mean, at least in terms of baseball. Josh, overall, as a fifth starter, how do you feel like Charlie Morton fits here? Do you think this is probably good?
Yeah, it's a 1 year deal to me. Like again, I'm kind of old school. I feel like I'm far removed from understanding current value. So to me, like 1 year, $15 million for those numbers is crazy, but that's probably the going rate. Whatever. Yeah, I think it's a good move for sure. I really do. He's not going to be what Braves Twitter, I think, thinks he's going to be, probably. But he might. I don't know. He's also super cute. He looks like Johnny Depp and Orlando Bloom had a baby.
I saw you say that, but there's one problem here, Josh.
Super cute.
His hairline goes further back than mine.
But he's got the cap on. With the cap on, whatever.
Weak beard game. Weak beard game.
Very weak beard game.
He's very handsome. Very
handsome.
For a man
older than me, it's very, very weird.
He's got like 13-year-old pubic hair on his chin. right? Like,
oh, he's 37. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, he's my age. Yeah,
he was. Listen, he was drafted in 2002, sandwiched between, or I think, no, after Francoeur, McCann, then Charlie Morton in that draft, with a couple supplemental picks thrown in, but yeah. So
yeah.
Kind of cool. Yeah, there's some rumors that the Tampa Bay Rays are wanting to trade Blake Snell. You know, reunion with Snell and Morton in Atlanta. Of course, everyone wants that. I think the chances of that are zero. But that being said, here's what I would do. I would call Tampa Bay, and I would say, hey, guys, we want to trade with you. Who would you like off of our squad? And when they tell you those names, I would go sign those guys to lifetime contracts, because Tampa does not lose trades ever, ever. They always trade people, get the most money for them, and then get some prospects that nobody had ever heard of who suddenly become superstars in their organization. Speaking of which, Randy Arozarena, right, guys? You know Randy Arozarena? It was really good during the playoffs. Josh, are you familiar with this fellow's name? He hit like 11 home runs in the postseason this year.
Never heard of her.
Yeah, he was really good. Anyway, Randy was arrested today in, I believe it was Mexico or somewhere.
Who tweeted about that?
For abducting his own daughter, or attempting to, and getting in a fight with his father-in-law.
What? Oh my gosh.
My guess is this is a situation where the mom doesn't want him to have the kid. They hid with their own family. Randy went and got the kid. I'm guessing this was not abduction the way that we tend to think of the term abduction. I think this is probably a legal matter for the court system, and he probably went and got his daughter and hung out with her for a little while, kind of thing. Either way, this is kind of weird. MLB's investigating it.
Very weird.
Trying to find out more about it.
Man, being that it was Mexico, is that an alien abduction? Weird. Did you know both Ian Anderson and Randy Arozarena can still qualify for Rookie of the Year next year?
That's kind of wild.
So there's your two leading candidates going into the next season.
Isn't Randy Arozarena also like 30? I think he is. I think he's like a lot older.
Is he? No, is he? I don't know. You can never try. You never know.
I don't know. I might be wrong on telling you that. I thought he was.
He has more postseason home runs than he does regular season home runs.
Yeah, he's 25. I'm sorry. He's 25, which is still a lot older for your typical rookie. You know what I'm saying? Especially a guy that comes in and hits like 11 home runs in the postseason, or 10 home runs in the postseason. That's kind of wild. Anyway, fellas, Thanksgiving's coming up. I need you to tell me, what is it that you fellas do for your Thanksgiving routine?
We're having a John Lewis memorial ceremony at my mom's house.
Well, at least you won't get arrested then. That's good.
Right.
Yeah.
In Forney, Alabama. But real talk, we're ham people. I know people like the turkey, but we have the ham. Lots of ham.
I prefer ham, but we're going to do both this year, I think. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My family won't get together. They're scared of the COVID.
I'm sorry, man. Seriously?
Not my direct family. My mom doesn't care. Well, I mean, she's respectful of it and cautious, but she's not the one canceling Thanksgiving. But, yeah, my aunt's deathly afraid of it, and maybe with good reason. They're 65-ish, 60-ish. It's not the best for their age range to...
Dude, I'm going to be the exact opposite when I'm 65. I'm going to go rob a bank. Like, what are they going to do? Like, sentence me to life, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I mean,
house
real
money at this point. I don't care. If I live to be 90, like, I'm going to rob a casino like Danny Ocean.
I don't think you'll be able to crawl through the ceiling like Danny Ocean did, JP.
No, but I mean, what do you got to lose? What are they going to do?
I'm there with you, buddy.
I'll be dead in 6 months. Who cares?
Let's do it.
Like, we got a jabroni like Alex Trebek. It's 6 months late.
Guys, just tell me where you hide the money, and when I'm 90, I'll go get the money for you and divvy it up when you get out of jail.
like, there's no way I'm doing that.
Oh, God, that's funny.
We do. I just helped my dad, Brian, about 12 turkeys tonight. My hands smell like But
I saw that picture on Facebook, dude. Was that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, he sells a bunch of, we do a bunch of turkeys and hams. He'll be smoking them up tomorrow. And then he sells those off. And then we'll be going down to Cochran, Georgia, Bleckley County, home of Amarius Mims, future Georgia All-American, and hanging out with some family there. And be all right. Be a good time.
Nice.
We're both ham and turkey. We're ham and turkey people. Fried turkey. Good smoked ham. Mm. Mm. Can't beat it. Macaroni and cheese. Mm. Green bean casserole.
Come on, you know, now.
See, I'm not a green bean casserole fan. I can't pull off the green
beans. I'm not either. I mean, I like it a little better than just plain old green beans. Just gives it an extra, bumps it up a notch. I'm a big mac and cheese guy. That's the most important thing at Thanksgiving to me. It's like the mac and cheese. Like, if you show up with, like, Kraft mac and cheese that's mixed together in a pot, like, go home. Like Thanksgiving is the good mac and cheese in the crock pot with the real, you know, the real cheese on it. Like, this is not the time for any cheese that consists of, like, in a powder substance that you mix in with water. That's not for Thanksgiving. That's for feeding a six-year-old.
That's true. On a semi-serious note here, fellas, it's a very good thing I don't live in California right now. But, or, what is it, Michigan, Minnesota, wherever that other woman, Whitmer, is from. Anyway.
Even North Carolina, here we have restrictions, too.
Or New York. It's not the Thanksgiving restrictions that get me. It's this whole curfew, have to wear a mask inside your house and outside your house. I'm sorry. You're going to have to put me in jail because I'm going to tell you exactly where you can stick your orders when you come to my house telling me what I can do in and out of my own house.
Up your butt. That's where.
That's where. You got that right. They can smoke more than a turkey.
No, it's like those rules. You know, there's all these old rules. You know, that, like, Columbus, Georgia, is illegal to sell a camel. Like, there's all sorts of weird laws.
Yes, but they're, like, actually trying to enforce these.
Yeah, this is a little different, JT.
What are they going to... They're not going to enforce anything. What can they do? They can't come into your house and...
They can. They are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if you're afraid of that, then you get what you deserve. If you're saying, oh, we can't do this because the law says, then you're an idiot.
And most people are in that category.
I will say this, though. I also don't feel sorry for most Californians because you elected the idiot that put these rules on top of you. So
100%.
You get what you asked for. But I am not a person that usually gets actually angered by politics. I might yell about it. I might call Josh and, you know, whine and complain about whatever's happening in politics, but I don't get, like, physically angry about politics very often. But there's been two different times this week that I was to the point that if a person was standing in front of me, I would have punched them in the face. One would be these people telling me about lockdowns, and I don't care. Like, if you're a fan of lockdowns, that's fine. I really don't mind you telling people that they need to be careful. I do have a problem with you telling me what I can do inside my own house. That becomes a problem. Like,
yes.
Like,
that's straight up communism.
I'm kind of okay with you saying that we need to wear a mask in public.
You are no longer a Democrat. At this point, you're no longer a Democrat. You're a communist.
Exactly.
Just own it.
Right. Like again, if it's public and you say I can't come into your restaurant without wearing a mask, that's your decision. Even if the government says that, like, I can kind of live with that. But you're not telling me that when I'm sitting in my own house that I paid for with my own money, that I have to sit here and wear a mask, you can take that mask and shove it right up your rear end because I'm endangering no one. Even if I have COVID, I'm endangering no one
and
but myself.
I'll invite whoever I want to Thanksgiving. Whoever
yes,
I want.
Yes.
It is none of your business.
That's yes. Right. As one of our greatest American presidents, Benjamin Franklin, once said, those that give up liberty to choose safety deserve neither.
He's the greatest president
in agreement with that. He's a great president. He invented electricity. Benjamin Franklin wanted the national mascot to be a turkey. So it's a fitting quote for Thanksgiving get-togethers. We need to think about Benjamin Franklin. I mean, the guy's on the quarter for a reason.
Was he the greatest president of the oldest country that's ever existed?
Shout out to three-year Letterman right now.
Yeah, shout out to him. Here's the other
He's part. Dan Keats. Guess who I am.
Here's the other part that made me probably more angry than the lockdowns, fellas. And that was Bill Kristol, who pretends to be a conservative.
Not to be confused with Billy Crystal.
Oh, very, very different people. Billy Crystal, or probably or very much a Democrat, but absolutely hysterical. And I'll stand by the fact that Billy Crystal is one of the greatest comedians of that I've ever heard. That being said, Bill Crystal was encouraging people to write in Trump and Pence in the Georgia Senate race. All because Bill Crystal is a snobbish, elitist, good-for-nothing. I'm trying to use words that I'm okay with using on the podcast.
Fucker.
If he were standing, so
is he
front
a liberal
me,
or a? I'm
he claims to be a conservative. He claims he was a never Trump conservative that was protecting conservatism. He's not the biggest piece of garbage. Like, look, fellas, Democrats and people that are Democrats. There's plenty of them that listen to this show. I'm sure there's people out there that listen to this show that are Democrats and get past our weird politics. Look, I can in my mind say, you know, Democrats, they might be a little insane sometimes, but they have a reasoning process for what they're doing. They're trying.
No, they don't.
Some of them do. Some Democrats are actually trying to help poor people. Some of them are trying to help other things. And they got carried up and they don't understand how math works sometimes. And so they don't understand how things actually function in the real world. But they're trying to be good people. But there is absolutely zero about Bill Crystal making that tweet that is positive in any way. And there is nothing. If Bill Crystal were standing in front of me right now, I'm actually pretty sure I would punch him in the face. And I don't have that feeling about politicians ever. Like,
I don't know. I don't know who this guy is. I'm not qualified to.
He is a editor for the Bulwark. He used to be with National Review at one point. His whole thing was never Trump. He couldn't vote for Trump because of Trump's character. And then he does something like this. Put him on a boat and sell him out to sea and sink the thing. Because I don't care if you didn't like Trump. I'm fine with people that were never conservatives. But intentionally misleading people to try to defend conservatism by getting them to put in votes that would not even count in a Senate race is absolute garbage. Also, speaking of the Senate race, fellas, I do think it's important we talk about this. You know, there's a very important Senate race here in Georgia. There's going to be two people running. If they get elected, then the conservatives could keep the Senate, all this kind of stuff, right? And Democrats are encouraging people to move to Georgia to be able to vote for the liberal candidate. Wow. I feel like this is a little bit, and the reason I bring this up on a baseball podcast is I feel like this is the proverbial Josh Brown moment right here. And that is, these are Cub fans living in Alpharetta.
Oh, yeah.
They move here. They reap all our benefits. And then when the Cubs come to town, they go to our wonderful stadium and they stand up and they cheer for the freaking Cubs. Yeah. They never cheer for the Cubs the rest of the year because they don't even know they exist.
They have no idea who Ron Santo is. But then when the Cubs
come to Atlanta. He had no legs.
When the Cubs come to Atlanta, they show up at the TED. And then I get drunk and cuss them out in the bathroom at the trough.
I remember being 18 years old and me and my father attended Game 5 of the 2003 NLDS. And we went to take a pee in the urinal and we were accosted by several drunk carpetbaggers from greater Winnetka, Illinois area
who now
hey,
live
Chicago,
in
Chicago. What do you say? Cubs are gonna win today. Go, Cubs, go. And it was horrible. Harry Carey was looking up with so much glee. I hated the Cubs from that point on. And they were just miserable.
Now, I feel like Harry Carey would look down with disgust at these. At these Alpharetta.
He's definitely looking up. Looking up.
I just got it. Sorry, the bourbon's kicked in.
I'm sorry. No, they were just obnoxious. They were probably good people. They're probably people I would enjoy hanging out with, to be honest with you. But I was like, no, God, stop. Like,
well, again, I don't mind Cubs fans that actually come from Chicago. What I don't like is people that pretend to be Cubs fans that have moved to Alpharetta and now want to pretend to be Cubs fans because it's the time of year where it helps them magically.
We need to make Atlanta great again. That's I mean, true. the whole damn thing. I mean, you go to a Braves game the last 15 years, and it's a bunch of Yankee losers.
It's not all.
Driving a bunch. I said a bunch.
Okay.
A bunch of Yankee losers and their Volvos who have no business living in our beloved state.
They all live in Ackworth, Josh.
which used to be Crackworth. It was respectable, okay?
I thought...
And now it's a bunch of Yankee yuppies and their stupid, like...
They now live... Look, Josh, they now have moved in and they live in our Civil War homes and pretend to be from the South while actually being carpetbaggers from the North.
With their liberal ghost in their kitchen.
In their liberal ghost in their kitchen, voting for Biden like a bunch of Yankee carpetbagging losers.
Watching their Hallmark movies.
Driving like their Acuras.
This is
throwing
so
their good. Money around.
Wearing so their Minnetonka boat shoe slippers.
And telling me
in John D. Howard's kitchen on Sunday morning that I'm not voting for Trump because of his character. Kiss all of my ass. Go back to Vermont.
If that person truly cared about character, they would not be spending the weekend with us.
That's 100% true.
I figured that the best thing to keep these kind of weirdo losers from being at Braves games would be the Atlanta United. I thought that they would just all be siphoned off and start going to soccer games in their coexist bumper sticker wearing Volvos, putting on a scarf and putting on their kit and attending a match on the pitch and pretending to be Harry Potter for 3 hours. I figured that's where they would all go. But no, baseball continues to be the sport of the nerd, and they still show up to Braves games, even though there's a soccer match right down the pitch there, down the avenue, and have a much
better time. To defend Braves games, Josh, when we went to social media night in Atlanta, right, we spent the first hour with all those social media dweebs, and the majority of them were exactly what JT and you just described. And they all had their tickets to the Atlanta United game that was going to be on Saturday, and they were super excited to go early so that they could hang out with, what's that guy that used to host The Voice that has a national syndicated radio show? Crap. He's from Atlanta.
Ryan Seacrest.
There you go. Not this American Idol, not The Voice.
UGA.
You know what I mean. Yeah. They were all excited about that. But then we went and sat down, Josh. Mm-hmm. And there is zero doubt, with the exception of our buddy Donahue sitting behind us, that the rest of that entire section were card-carrying gun owners that were drunk as skunks. The girl in front of us that was adamantly hitting on Josh while Nikki was looking at her like she was about to beat her brains out. I think Nikki was with us, wasn't she? Yeah, she was, wasn't she? I think so. Anyway, that girl kept hitting on you, and Josh finally had to, like, kind of make fun of her a little bit to get her turn around and shut up. But there was zero doubt that the rest of that section were card-carrying rednecks and were very proud to be at a Braves game as card-carrying
rednecks.
Remember
the guy next to us? He was some, like, 48-year-old-ish guy he was from somewhere in Tennessee. He's like, y'all the non-culmination guys? Yeah, I listen to y'all while I'm cutting my grass in my yard.
I'm like, which was awesome.
That's awesome.
Because we know that the liberals from Ackworth don't actually cut their own yard. They pay some illegal Mexican to do it.
They do.
We know that they pretend that it's for, you know.
Right.
Well, JT, you live in a castle. Of course you don't cut your own grass.
I mean, his name is Jeff. He's not illegal. Maybe he's Canadian. I don't know.
Jeff.
I have a yard guy.
My yard guy's name is Rex.
You have a yard guy too? God, you're such yuppies.
Yeah.
I just don't cut my grass. It gets giant.
You have goats and stuff, Ken.
You have a windmill in your front yard. Literally in your front yard.
That's true.
Time is money. I'd rather
just go back to Kenny's house for a weekend.
Fellas, speaking of time is money, and this will be the last thing for today. ESPN has decided to move most of their actual valuable content, behind a paywall so that you now have to have ESPN Plus to get most of their actual useful articles.
Seriously?
Seriously.
What like, useful articles?
Okay,
I thought it was already an ESPN insider thing.
Yeah. So if you, like Matthew Berry, JT, and I realize Matthew Berry is not necessarily someone's favorite fantasy football analyst, but a lot of people like his stuff and like to read it. His love-hate column that he's done for 20 years or whatever on fantasy football that's kind of made his career, they forced him to put it behind a paywall. It was not his decision. He didn't want it to be. They made him put it behind a paywall. It's very obvious from the way he wrote his goodbye thing that it was he was kind of pissed about it. But, yeah, how do we feel about ESPN locking most of their content? Like, I know ESPN is a little bit of a joke now, but it's still the number one place people log in.
Is this a desperate move? Are they hurting? Are they looking at The Athletic and they're like, I'm a little scared, maybe?
I go to ESPN.com roughly once a year, and that's to print out a bracket for March Madness.
True.
That's it. Sometimes I go to CBS if they got it up quicker. That's it. As far as writing an article online about fantasy football, imagine telling a girl at the bar, hey, what do you do for a living? I write an article about fantasy football.
He married a really hot girl, so I'm not going to say anything about it.
Oh, I'm sure he wowed her with a magic trick when he met her at the bar at Ruby Tuesdays or whatever. That's, come on, it's the nerdiest thing in the world. Fantasy football writers, I like that. Fantasy football writers are the goofiest guys because they know nothing more than we know. Like, all they can do is guess and tell you, hey, this guy's questionable. He might not play. Okay, yeah, I know. Like, I checked my fantasy app and it told me the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the point was about fantasy football, though. The point was about ESPN moving their content behind a paywall. Look, JT, I agree with you. I don't use ESPN heavily, but you know what I do use ESPN for? I flip it open and I check scores. There was a point that I could follow along and kind of keep news
from
there.
I watch College Game Day and then College Final on Sunday mornings.
But how many people that aren't big time into sports? I mean, and I would say the three of us consider ourselves pretty big into sports. Even if, Josh, I know you're tongue-in-cheek not a huge fan, even though you sort of are. But the three of us are still, we produce a podcast about sports. So we're not the typical sports consumer. It's sort of about sports. There's a lot of average Joes, though, that still log on and hop on ESPN to see what the latest news is. Like, you know,
what?
It's just
is this 1998? Who is doing this? There's so many better avenues to get your sports info from, like Twitter or just, you know, listen to podcasts. The Athletic has a ton of great podcasts out. You don't. Like, who's reading articles anymore?
But you have to subscribe to The Athletic to get their podcasts.
No, you don't. You can get the podcast for free.
Subscribe to The Athletic.
How do you get The Athletic podcast for free?
I didn't know
you
got
a podcast and search it.
I thought it was behind a paywall.
No, I listen to all of them. I listen to 755 is Real. I listen to Starkville. I listen to a bunch of good stuff. Man, it's good stuff. But I watch ESPN. Like, if Georgia's on the ESPN, I'll watch it. I do tune into College Game Day every now and then because watching Lee Corso is like watching a Biden press conference. It's amazing.
It is.
You never know what he's going to say or do.
That's a little low. That's a little blow.
That's 100% accurate, though. It's a little low and 100% accurate.
Okay. Yeah, to be fair. Okay. That was a little low.
Lee is much more entertaining.
It's like watching Stephen Hawking predict football games.
Except Hawking would get it right. Come on, JT.
He's dead. Maybe
and
Lee Corso
is still more
right
than Lee Corso.
Could be a Weekend at Corso kind of thing they got going on. I'm not really sure. But I don't think that the typical consumer is going to a website to read articles anymore. I think we're such a short attention span society that, like, other than going to message boards or maybe reading a blog, reading a full page article just sounds so cavemanish now. Like,
that's huge for you, though, JT.
20 years ago.
It's obviously working well for The Athletic. They're making a killing off of it. And I love their articles. I think their articles are fantastic.
If I'm a Lakers fan, I'm not getting my news from reading an ESPN article about LeBron James. I'm reading the SB Nation Lakers page. Or I am in the Lakers message boards. Or I follow a bunch of Lakers things on Twitter.
Okay,
you know,
but what if you want Adam Schefter's inside cut or Adrian Wojnarowski's inside cut, and they put all that behind an ESPN paywall.
But if you're on Twitter and you're not following Schefter or getting Woj bombs from Woj, then you're doing Twitter wrong. Because if you're a sports fan, those are must-follow guys.
But do you know how many people don't use Twitter? Like,
that's their mistake.
Yes, but that's not the point. The point is ESPN's now preventing people from getting actual news. This, to me, is the bigger part of it. They went from being a news agency, which, look, anybody that's kept up with ESPN heavily knows they're a propaganda machine now more than a news agency. But that's true of all of our news now. And now they're putting it behind a paywall as well. It feels, I'm kind of like Josh. Is this desperation? Is this like they're getting their butts kicked? You know, I don't know. It's just weird. It's weird. And I don't like it. I don't like things that I once respected.
They're 1,000% getting their butts
giving
kicked.
Giving up.
Yeah, they are.
Because
they're getting known.
When I was a kid, ESPN was great. I liked going to ESPN.
SportsCenter was
there.
Must watch TV. SportsCenter was much watch. And
like, Kenny Mayne, growing up on Kenny Mayne, off the chain.
Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah, I mean, oh my gosh. Rich Eisen and Dan Patrick, the big show. I mean, come on. Stuart Scott, Keith Olbermann. Before he became
Chris Berman.
Guy.
Yeah. Oberman. Oberman has lost his freaking mind. Holy crap. Yeah.
No sports, one circles the wagon.
For those listening,
Buffalo
for
Bills.
Those young, not millennials, what's the generation younger than millennials now? Generation Y? For those Generation Y listeners, sports used to be masculine. When you watch SportsCenter in the morning, it was like this beautiful just buffet. Yeah. Buffet of manliness and political incorrectedness.
Do you guys remember beautiful. How great it was on a Monday morning before school?
Yeah.
Turn on SportsCenter and you get a chance to see plays of the week.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
Dude. New generation doesn't even know what that was. Plays of the week.
Y'all don't
that
even
was
know.
Where, that was where, like, oh my gosh, plays of the week was the biggest, coolest thing.
Yeah.
Now, guys, we just take in information differently because you don't have to read ESPN to know Adam Schefter because all you got to do is Google Adam. You don't have to have a Twitter account. You can just Google Adam Schefter Twitter and boom, it's all right there on your browser. And
but
as
I
soon
still,
as something happens, it's a,
there's still
it's,
something to be said for reading a story. There's something to be said for getting an actual news story and not a one-sentence clip that fills in the gaps.
I love stories. I have 10 different Louis Grizzard books. I like stories. They're good. But I just, for quick information, now
but,
with Twitter, it's made everything else obsolete.
So you're not
breaking
wrong.
Breaking news.
You're not wrong, but I think that goes in the exact opposite of what we were saying in yesterday's episode of this podcast about the importance of stories in baseball and getting away from just being infomaniacs that live on what's the latest little spurt of information rather than getting the story of baseball told again, you know?
Right. No, and no, stories are fine, but I'm talking like currently, like right now in this landscape where you got NBA and MLB free agency, quick information is where it's at. Like if that's what you're after.
But okay, so you're not wrong, but here's the weird thing. Why do we crave information like that now?
Because I want to know what's going on, when it's going on, so I can be a part of everything. Like today.
How does it make you a part of it?
I got two texts back-to-back, voop-voop, right in my pocket, with the Braves signed Charlie Morton. Within a minute of the tweet going out that the Braves had done it, John Howard was texting us, my dad was texting, and we knew right away. Now,
if you didn't find out until Saturday, how would that have changed anything?
Wouldn't have changed my life at all. But 20 years ago, we wouldn't have known until later in the day when ESPN.com published an article and then we read it, or maybe we even read it in, remember these things, newspapers? Maybe we read it in the next day's paper that the Braves had signed Charlie Morton. Or we saw it on the 6 o'clock Sports Center after the workday.
Yeah.
Something
and
like
it
that.
Had more information, you know, like it. You had the quotes from AA already, and you had a lot more complete picture of the story, not just, hey, the Braves signed this guy. Now you got, no, this was the guy the Braves have been targeting as one of their top three. You know, I mean, and like, it's complete. And look, I'm as guilty as anybody, JT. I'm not like pointing fingers at you about this. It's like we're all at this place now where we live to think knowing more information and having more information like somehow gives us more control when we don't have any. I really think that's like the essence of it, is like this idea that we somehow control more because we know more. Nope.
And you got to have an opinion on the information right away, too.
Yeah!
Right away, you could tell me if Charlie Morton's signing sucks or if it's awesome. And it
Which
seems
is terrible.
To be that 90% of Braves Twitter likes it. I think there's a 10% of people that are like, oh, typical Braves, signing an old pitcher. This is what they do. but you have an opinion on things right away because you got the information right away, and so you feel like you are engaging in what's going on in the culture surrounding your favorite team. You can have an instant reaction because you got instant information. So, right. You know, the days of waiting for the article to come out to read it, and then, you know, now we can interact right away with people that agree or disagree with us.
So, I think
it's good and bad.
I think there's a lot of problem with that because now we don't operate off of a full story. We operate off of fact, and facts can lie. And what I mean by that is, like, facts can 100% lie because I can tell – look, okay, so let me give you an example of a fact lying. A fact would be – I'm trying to think of a good example of this. Okay, a fact would be 99.98% of people survive COVID, right? Like, that's a fact. That fact right. is not true, though, of people 90 years old. And so that can be misleading. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the fact is still true.
The fact is lying dependent upon the context you put it in. And like, Josh trolls with it. But that's the thing people point out to Josh when Josh trolls with those tweets is, yeah, but, and then they put it in a different context and they show, well, Josh, what you said is not true in this context. And Josh is like, well, duh, but I just put the fact out there. You added the context to it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I just use that example because it's something we deal with a lot. Facts in and of themselves, though, are not a true story. They're just facts. And facts outside of context can tell you the wrong information because as a consumer, you put it in the wrong context. Does that make sense? It's like your wife telling you that you look good today and you automatically assume I'm getting lucky tonight, right? Like, that's the way your brain, like, puts all that together. And you're like, but she didn't mean it in that context whatsoever. You look good today. Like, she meant that part, but, like, the rest of that context messed everything up. Does that make sense?
No, the real-life experience, and you guys might have heard it if you're listening intently to the show, my wife popped in to yell at me because we had our kids write letters to Santa, and apparently I left them in the back pocket of my jeans and they went through the washing machine.
Oh, no!
I don't remember even putting them in my pocket, but she was like,
RIP JT.
I thought I put them in the drawer. I don't remember putting them in the pocket of my jeans, but now I got to apologize for something that I'm not even sure I did. So.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is a fact devoid of context really isn't a fact. It's just thrown at you information. It's like putting on the screen when you're watching Fox News, there's 57 tickers, and you feel like you know something because there was all this information being thrown at you, and you really don't know anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, knowing a fact devoid of the context of that fact means you really didn't know anything more. And I think baseball is a good example of that, but I think that's kind of the way we live our lives a lot of time now. I don't know. It's a little disappointing that we kind of have become these information junkies.
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in all of you.
Yeah. All you people listen, me and JT, we're perfect. Josh, he's asleep, so it is what it is.
I'm waiting to get my copy of the AJC in the morning that I can get a full picture of the Charlie Morton signing tomorrow, and then I'll move.
That's going to do it for today's episode of the iCombination Podcast Show. Josh, JT, thanks for hanging out with me as always. Hey, if you guys would like to support the show, you can do so in a variety of ways. You can get your own Knock Home of Swag shirts, hats, t-shirts, all kinds of cool stuff. You can get that at shop.spreadshirt.com. You can support the show by becoming patron members, patreon.com/knockcombination, where you can get a nice little Knock Combination sticker to slap on your car, your computer, your wife's butt. Or you can get you a shout out on the show or even a t-shirt. You can get your own t-shirt by signing up to be a Patreon supporter of the show. So check that out. That's patreon.com/knockcombination. Also, if you check out our Facebook page, there's a couple of pages on there that talk about how to get one of the new Knock Combination Richardson hats that John D. Howard, our spiritual advisor, has hooked us up with and pimped out. It's a nice little,
my gosh,
what is
y'all.
It, Holtzman leather stamped. It's really cool looking Knock Combination hats. You should check them out. Josh.
Sorry to end the show on a bummer, but Hal Ketchum just died.
Oh, man.
Like, maybe, honestly, one of my favorite artists, man. Sorry, I just, ugh.
What did he catch? I was just asking. Hal Ketchum. He was really good, though. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Speaking of Satin, Joe Burrow ripped his ACL, MCL, PCL, and meniscus, like, all separately. He needs to go see Ryan. My name's just Klesko's doctor.
Wait, Hal Ketchum, Small Town Saturday Night? Hal Ketchum?
Yeah.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Hal Ketchum.
Yeah.
Hope he goes to heaven and not hell.
Y'all are the worst.
Is he a Hall of Famer? Country artist?
Goodbye.
Honestly, I'm logging off.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit NakahomaNation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Options Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.